Hi, my name is Warner Lewis. Thank you for joining me for Creating Home, a weekly podcast exploring what different successful individuals have done to allow them to find their physical, emotional, and spiritual home. We'll discuss their individual journeys, including disadvantages, roadblocks, adversity, and dead ends, as well as their strategies, successes, and support, which allowed them to overcome obstacles and thrive. When I first thought of creating a real estate-focused podcast, it quickly expanded beyond chatting with past clients and friends about their real estate. While real estate provides my financial livelihood as a New York City real estate broker helping clients purchase and sell their homes for the past 15 years, my passion for it derives from expanding my life through the close relationships that are created during the process of finding a home. Indeed, a home to me is so much more than the physical walls in which we live, but it is also the actions we take to ground ourselves and find peace and acceptance, as well as the people with whom we surround ourselves and who give support and guidance. As we find ourselves spending more time at home these days, I have reflected on my own journey that started with the choice to go into this industry 16 years ago. At that time, I was basically unemployable, alone, deeply depressed, and truly felt that real estate was the last option I had and had avoided because if this didn't work, I felt I was out of options. The act of going into real estate and metaphorically burning the boats behind me and being all in on changing my life has led me to the place where I am today. I have an incredible business partner, Ari Harkove, and we have had one of the top 200 real estate sales teams in the nation for the past 5 years. I have a loving and deeply accommodating wife and two wonderful and exhausting kids and more true friendships than I ever dared hope for when I was a socially awkward and terrified kid. The hope is that in hearing what these intrepid individuals have gone through to get where they are today will be inspiring to others on their journey to find home and a sense of physical safety, emotional peace, and individual success in the sometimes raging storm of life. If that happens, then the goal of this podcast will have been met. Today, we have Michael Chernow, who is a serial entrepreneur and the creator of Meatball Shop, among other things, which took the city by storm. And I remember hearing of someone who created a restaurant and returned all his investors' money in 3 months. And having been in many such investments, I haven't gotten my money back usually in 3 years. And years later, through a mutual acquaintance, I met Michael and have always been blown away by his fortitude and willingness to push himself to the absolute extreme. And so today, I'm very happy to welcome Michael Chernow to the podcast. So Michael, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be on the call. And, that was an incredible intro. So I'm honored.
Well, it's, it really has been amazing because when Meatball Shop opened, you guys literally created the fast casual movement in my mind. And I just remember a friend of mine who would put money in with you and, and said that in 3 months, the full investment was returned, which doesn't happen. It just doesn't. And then the next time I heard about you was actually through a mutual friend, Jay Weiss, who told me the story of you as a not yet 18-year-old looking to rent an apartment from him and going to him and saying, I can't rent to you. You're not of age. He's like, look, you saying to him, I will pay on time every time. You have nothing to worry about. And you did. And you have become, a close friend of someone of Jay's who I think the world of. And it's always been your word is your bond. And you will push through any obstacle to get where you want to get to. And I know you've had dizzying heights, both good and bad, that you've reached and fallen to. But with you, I've seen nothing but the willingness to get up, dust yourself off, accept life on life's terms and keep going. And I've jumped ahead a little bit, but I can't wait to hear about that. I'd love to hear about your home now that you're living in and also the home and what drew you to the home in Brooklyn that we found a few years ago now.
Well, gosh, you brought back some memories. Jay Weiss is a good old friend. He's actually the first landlord that gave me a shot on my own. You know, I moved out of my childhood home at a very young age. I was just kind of a crazy, wild child, and probably very, very difficult for my parents. And I actually moved out of there when I was 15 years old, bouncing around the streets of New York, couch to couch, you know, and that was really sort of hard to keep a hold on me. But, you know, I got my real first apartment by myself. I mean, I had a roommate, but like I was the leaseholder with Jay Weiss. And I remember I said to him something very similar to what you just said. I was like, look, man, you know, I've been working since I'm 13 years old. I am a responsible guy, and I can promise you that every month you'll get my rent check. And he gave me a shot, and I had that apartment for a long time. That was right upstairs from a restaurant that I was working in. But, you know, you're a guy that I was introduced to, and immediately I just felt connected to you. I felt like, you know, we had been friends for a long time, and you carry yourself in such a way that like trust is easy with you. So I felt like you were going to lead us in the right direction, my wife and I. And we had been living in Williamsburg for a long time. We had, you know, we had this really great place on Habermeyer Street. We got it in 2007, I think. And we had made that our home. And as we started to grow our family, you know, we met very young, Don and I, my wife and I. We met when I was 24 and she was 22. And so we've been together since we were kids, pretty much. And we spent a lot of time married before we actually had kids. And in 2015, we had our first son, Finley, and we raised him as a baby in that great apartment on Habermeyer Street. And when we were ready for round two, you know, we said, we love this place, but it's a 4-story walk up and we gotta find something a little easier and bigger. And that's when I met you, and you took us around, and, you know, my wife and I just felt the utmost trust in the relationship, and you found us this great place that we absolutely love on Lorimer Street. And, you know, just it was everything we were looking for, in our price range, number of bedrooms, big backyard. My wife is, you know, born and raised on a farm in Denmark. So, you know, she requires outdoor space, and, you know, and that's not an easy thing to come by, like a sizable outdoor space in New York City. But you found it for us, and we absolutely love that place. And that said, you know, obviously we're in a really interesting time in history right now. I think historically this will go down forever. This COVID situation. The world has been shut down for the most part, all over the world. You know, countries and cities and states and towns and villages have all shut down. And it's sort of given everybody, you know, a little bit of a scare, or a lot of bit of a scare, but also an opportunity to understand that things like this can happen. We're not invisible. We're not untouchable. These things can happen. And that's also forced people to pay attention to the things that are most important. Just because everything stops doesn't mean time stops. And so when time doesn't stop, you're still able to appreciate the things around you. And the things around you today are your homes and your family. And so what we did was we packed up our stuff in Brooklyn in early March. And, you know, we were lucky to have a place outside of the city, about 2 hours north in Ghent, New York, which is just outside of Hudson, just south of Chatham. And we've essentially moved up here. And it's absolutely wild. I'm born and raised in New York City. Never thought that I would even consider living full time in the country. But we are absolutely considering, if not had made the decision already, to move up here for a year. This place is truly home. My wife, my sons, and I have fallen in love with this house all over again. You know, when you first buy something, it's so exciting, and you know the creative component of buying something, and you know, especially an old farmhouse like this, where you just, you know, you close your eyes and you see how you're gonna revise the whole place. And now that we're up here, we've fallen in love with it again. And so much so that we've decided that we're going to attempt to live up here for a year. So, you know, home for us is in two places. It's in Brooklyn and it's in upstate New York. And currently upstate New York is where we're resting our heads.
So loud and clear outdoor space and greenery is what is required for the Chernow household. And yeah, that definitely, from seeing the through story, not knowing the Ghent house, I see that as part of all three of them. Now to you know, the nitty gritty of Michael Chernow and how you've gotten to where you are and what you've gone through and the basic tenets that have allowed you to go from someone starting work at 13 years of age and to be where you are today. You know, I would love to hear sort of what are those things that were central to your belief in yourself or things you picked up along the way that really allowed you to take what are pretty momentous risks and reach great heights, deal with failure, which is a part of life, and have such an unbelievably positive view. And, you know, you're actually the one that really lit the match or flame for me to start this podcast, which is something that doesn't come naturally to me. You are someone who could be on camera any moment, any day, and your charisma comes shining off of you. I'm much better one-on-one. But it really was a conversation with you about getting out there and doing something just to be out there and help others and grow one's brand that really got me to do this. And you know, I just love to hear, why does it seemingly come so natural? Very few things come naturally. Things look natural after a lot of hard work. How did you get to a point where you're so comfortable putting yourself out there and trusting in yourself and believing that you're going to be the last one standing?
Well, I mean, I guess I should just take it back to the beginning. You know, I can remember some of my earliest memories. I was always, I've always had this sort of discovery gene, this need and this necessity to lift up rocks and fearlessly make. You know, I'm a maker, and you know, when I was a little kid, I was always trying to make. And I remember, you know, I grew up on 87th Street between 1st and 2nd Avenue in Manhattan, and you know, if I was, you know, you have kids, right? And so when mm-hmm. you know, when you're a kid, you'll have, you know, I see it so clearly with my kids. You know, my son Finn, who's a little older than Dakota, you know, he'll go through a Batman phase, and then I'll buy him some Batman toys. And then, like, out of nowhere, he'll just go right into PJ Masks. And and he's just like totally forgotten about his Batman toys. And then he'll go into like Lego. And when I was a kid, I probably had similar things. I would shift from, you know, like He-Man to, you know, WWF wrestling. But I clearly remember being bored with a set of toys and then asking my sister, I have to be 5 or 6 years old, asking my sister to go downstairs with me and like hang out with me while I sold my toys on the street. And I remember taking a sheet and, you know, this is like New York City in the 80s, you know, taking a sheet, walking downstairs, laying a sheet down on the sidewalk in the summertime and putting all the toys that I didn't want anymore on the sheet and trying to sell them for like a dollar each. And so I just always been that way. I always thought entrepreneurially, and I can't tell you why. I really can't. You know, my dad was a failed entrepreneur. So my dad was certainly an entrepreneur, and my grandfather was a successful entrepreneur. And so I can tell you very clearly that entrepreneurialism is certainly in my genes. You know, my lineage, my father and my grandfather were both entrepreneurs. But I don't think that is necessarily something that I picked up on at an early age. I think I was born with this make gene. And so, you know, I kind of followed that path unknowingly. But, you know, when I was like 11 years old, I was walking every single dog in my neighborhood. My parents could not stop me. I made, you know, flyers, and I put our home number on the flyers. And, you know, like, back in the day, you know, you'd make a flyer and you'd paste it on a lamppost, and you just say, I'm a dog walker. If you want your dog walked, I'll do it for the cheapest price possible. Take my number. And I was getting all these calls. And before I knew it, I was walking like every dog. And then I found out that if I went into all the high rise buildings and asked the doorman if I could put the flyers in the laundry rooms in the building, I'd probably get even more attention. So I was just walking all these dogs. And from the moment I got home from school till about 7 o'clock at night, I was walking dogs. And finally, my parents were like, okay, this is too much. You have to stop. But I was making a ton of cash. And so, you know, I did that. And then I got a job in the church rectory at St. Thomas More, because I just wanted to, I wanted to make more money. And so I did that. And then finally, I was working in the church rectory on the weekends. And then I was delivering videos for Couch Potato Video. And a buddy of mine was answering phones at a restaurant for the delivery department. He was about a year and a half older than me. And he said, hey man, you know, I was delivering videos on rollerblades because so I was fast. And he was like, hey, why don't you just, you know, start working at the Candle Cafe? You can do delivery, food delivery as well. I was like, perfect. I was like happy to have three jobs at 13. And so that's what I did. And when I started working in the restaurant, I fell in love with the restaurant. I fell in love with the ability to engage with human beings that were older than me. I felt like I could really sort of like test my skill set, even though I didn't know what that was at that time. I knew that I had something unique when it came to human connection and connectivity, and I felt like that was where I was gonna hang for a while. And so I quit Couch Potato Video. I stopped working at the church rectory. And I started working in the restaurant a bunch, and, you know, I was delivering food, and then they put me in the kitchen as a prep cook. And then they asked me if I wanted to be a busboy. And so once I hit the front of the house in restaurants, I was 14 or 15. That's when I said, this is it. This is it. This is what I'm going to do. And I just knew it. And I loved the food. I loved the hospitality, but really what I loved was the people. I fell in love with people. And I just, for some reason, some weird reason, I have the ability to connect with people. And I think that is ultimately what has been the key to my success. The ability to walk into a room, not judge anybody, be able to sort of acclimate to, you know, the president of the United States, all the way down to the homeless guy on Astor Place. Like I'm comfortable. And so I worked in restaurants, and then I worked in nightclubs, and then at 16, I started a business for all these nightclub promoters, and I had all my friends working for me. And, you know, I was getting paid $14 an hour to stuff envelopes for, you know, mailing lists for these promoters. This is pre-email days. So every single, you know, party invitation was actually sent through mail. And so I was getting paid $14 an hour from five different promoters. And then I had my friends working for me for $7 an hour. So I was actually making like $50 an hour when I was doing this stuff. And it was just, you know, but I will say, through that journey, working in restaurants in the nightlife at such a young age, I partook in a lot of the bad news, right? Like, I mean, I learned so much, and I was exposed to so many people, successful people, really creative people, some absolute assholes, but like at the end of it, I loved every minute of it. And I was out of my house. You know, I didn't have any real rules, in my life at that age. So I was able to work late hours, and I still went to high school, and I graduated high school, which was a blessing. You know, I ultimately parted my brains out until I was about 23 years old, at which point, you know, a boss of mine took me aside and said, you know, Mikey, everybody loves you. I love you like a son. But you're killing yourself, man. And you have so much to offer. And I just can't watch this anymore. I can't, simply can't watch you drink and party the way you do on my watch. I'm going to fire you, man. And I'd been working at this restaurant in the East Village for 3 years. And so I loved this place. I loved this restaurant. I still love this restaurant. It's called Frank's Restaurant.
Yeah.
It's
Frank. Oh, okay.
And so, yeah. And so he gave me, you know, I begged him for my job. I begged him. And finally, he gave me, he said, look, kid, I there's only one way I can feel comfortable giving you your job back, and it's not going to be behind the bar. You're going to come to the restaurant at 8 o'clock in the morning. You're going to do it for a month. You're going to not drink. You're going to get sober. And when you get to the restaurant, if you call me a minute past 8 a.m., you're fired. So you're going to clean the restaurant with the porters, and I'm going to pay you minimum wage, and that's what it's going to be. And I said, absolutely, let's go. And I didn't know what I was getting myself into, but that was the day that my life changed. You know, I went to an walked into an AA meeting that day, and everything changed. My whole entire life, you know, I'm still the person I was, but the good stuff and the ambitious Mike and the guy that could take a punch and bounce right back up. That was the guy that came out of this experience, not the guy that was running and hiding behind rocks, because that's what I was doing for a bunch of years when I was partying. And I just didn't, you know, I wasn't, you know, and I was young, but, you know, I was an extreme, like you said earlier, I'm an extreme person. So I certainly party to the extreme. Anyway, when I woke up literally and started taking things seriously, I fell in love with fitness and nutrition, and I made a plan, and I said, I'm going to go to culinary school. I'm going to write a business plan. I'm going to raise money, and I'm going to open up a restaurant. And that is exactly what I did. I cleaned my act up pretty quickly. You know, I was in the best shape of my life within 30 days of getting sober. And I enrolled for culinary school, and I went to the French Culinary Institute. And then while I was there doing the chef's culinary program, Cornell Hotel School and Union Square Hospitality Group had collaborated on a restaurant management associates program. And so they launched it while I was there. And I said, I'm going to jump in there. And I applied for a scholarship. You had to like write a restaurant concept, a fully flushed out restaurant concept, and submit it, and you can get a full boat scholarship. And so I wrote this concept, and I got the scholarship, and I went. And when I graduated, it was like 2 years or 18 months or 2 years for the culinary and the management. I got right to work, and I wrote a business plan for the meatball shop, and you know, 12 regulars at Frank Restaurant who had watched me go from a boy to a man, and they all invested. And that's the beginning of my journey as a business owner and restaurateur, real entrepreneur. You know, opened up the meatball shop, and you know, it was just unbelievable success. And it's humbling to even think about it, you know, because it's so hard to this very day. You know, it's so hard to run and operate restaurants, but for whatever reason, Daniel Holzman and I were able to really strike a chord with the people of New York City. And you know, before we knew it, we were cooking meatballs on Jay Leno and Jimmy Fallon and Good Morning America and the Today Show. And, you know, we had a TV show. I mean, it was nuts. And then I said, you know, after 4 years of that, you know, let me take another risk and let me see if I can do it again. So I decided to step down as a co-CEO at the meatball shop and pass the baton to Daniel to lead the ship. And I really wanted to create another concept. So I sold some equity at Meatball and started focusing on this new project called Seymour's. And I opened that up in 2015. And I feel lucky to say that it was another hit. And, you know, before I left Meatball Shop, we had opened up 6 restaurants. When I opened up Seymour's in 2015, I didn't have any partners. I wasn't planning on doing the exact same thing about opening up a bunch of restaurants. But because of the success of the business, you know, I'd attracted a bunch of interested parties to help me grow it. And I took on a partner eventually and opened up 6 of those. And that's my story. You know, I think failure is a big part of my story. Partnerships are really, really difficult. I've learned so much about communication and keeping my mouth shut and learning to listen as opposed to waiting to speak. Big difference. I am a glass half full guy all the time. I just am. And to a fault, I would say, because I'm just an overly optimistic, fearless entrepreneur. I am not afraid to take a risk, and I love communicating and leading people and building teams. And so I just have this weird, unwavering fear, a lack of fear, rather, in the world of creating business and taking risks. And so far, it's worked out pretty well, and I'm just grateful.
So, do you think that glass half full mentality is something you had, or something that you grew, or something that really came into full fruition when Meatball Shop became a success? And this is coming from someone who has always been half empty, even though my life has always been half full, to say the least. But my viewpoint, because of the environment I was raised in, was always one that the universe was out to get me. And it's something that I have gone to great lengths in my life in the past 10, 20 years to find people who are the opposite of that and to stay as close to them as possible. And so it's really interesting for me to hear, you know, if that's just something that was innate to you or something that you worked on. Is it a muscle, basically?
It is absolutely innate. I was born with a positive outlook on life, even though I had a really rough upbringing, really tough relationship with my father. And, you know, I went through a lot as a young kid, but we all have things. I've always looked at situations through a positive lens, optimistic lens. And always. I just, even when I was in the deepest, darkest places, of addiction and learning about myself, for whatever reason, I was always positive. I never really, I'm the kind of guy that walks into a room and is looking to develop relationships. And I have many friends and family members who walk into a room and start picking out the people that they think are too cool or thinking poorly of them. As a restaurateur, I have a really hard time walking into a restaurant and not noticing the problems just because I'm an operator. And that is ingrained in my head. When it comes to just like, you know, I've just always, always, always have seen the positive side of things and pay little attention to the negative side. I like to say, you know, negative situations are my oxygen. I thrive in negative situations when shit's going down and it's really hard and everybody's kind of scared. Like that is when I'm at my strongest. Negative people, I drown in. I drown. Like it is my kryptonite. I can't, I do not work well with people that I have many friends. Like, I mean, all my business partners have been, you know, sort of like glass half empty. And I have a lot of friends who are, you know, glass half empty and hate me because I'm so optimistic about things. Even my wife, you know what I mean? She's just like, you never think anything bad is going to happen. And my answer is, it's not that I don't think nothing bad is going to happen. I just don't pay a lot of attention to the thought of something bad happening. Because I'll give you a great example. Unfortunately, my 98-year-old grandfather has contracted COVID last Friday. This past Friday,
I'm so sorry to hear that.
Yeah, it sucks. However, you know, he's 98. He's in a nursing home. He's one of the strongest men I've ever known. He is a naval commander. He fought in World War II. He built an amazing business. He's the only person in my family to ever generate any sort of wealth. I'm trying to follow in his footsteps. He's 98. The man swam laps and laps and laps in the pool until he was 92. He's 6'3", has hands the size of baseball mitts. And he's like the guy that I probably, look up to most in my life, even though I don't think about it that often. When I really think about somebody that I really want to give me a pat on my back, it's Poppy, my grandfather. And so he contracted COVID on Friday, and, you know, he's in intensive care in the hospital in Florida. Obviously, we can't see him in person, but the nurse was kind enough to invite everybody to a Zoom call last night. And, you know, he's not really conscious. But we had this Zoom call with him. And I know that he's not in a coma. He's not able to communicate or open his eyes. But I just know that he can hear us. And, you know, my sister's crying, my mother's crying, my aunt's kind of like halfway. And I'm on there laughing and singing and just having a good time, because I know that we can all focus on the negative, but it doesn't do shit for anyone. It just simply does not do anything for anyone. And I'm not saying run away from feelings. I'm just saying that, like, the less thought you put on the negative and the more thought you put on the positive, the better the situation will be. It's just straight up logistics, right? Like, you just got to think about it. Logistically, if you think positively, most of the time, most of the situations that you experience, whether they're good or bad, are going to be more positive than negative. However, if you think negatively most of the time, most of the situations that you experience, be them positive or negative, are going to be negative. And the negative shit affects everyone around you. So I choose to be positive and optimistic no matter what. And, you know, it doesn't mean I'm like a complete unrealistic, like irresponsible person. But I just know that if I see the positive in every situation, the chances of that situation being palatable for myself and others are just greater. And that's my sort of philosophy on that.
Yeah. You know, it's amazing to hear. And it's another thing that we talked about that really had an impression on me, because I know, you know, you pointed me towards Obstacles Are the Way, which I'm listening to now, which has been extraordinarily helpful in these times. And you also discussed with me, you know, something we won't go into great depth on, because I know there's a lot going on with it, about a financial thing that hit you, which everyone's getting hit with financial things now, but yours and something that I dealt with are very personal and hurt. And the way that I dealt with it was to completely melt down for a week, make everyone miserable around me. And when I talked to you, you had the most stoic response, which was, yeah, this happened on Monday. It's Wednesday. I haven't really done anything about it. I'm thinking my way through it. And then I'll act. And I'm doing it this way because I have a family and I have a wife who I've put through some things in the past. And I just don't choose to go that way this time. And I remember exactly where I was walking at 8 a.m. through Williamsburg, right outside of 25 Kent. And when you said that, and I just like stunned me, like someone could actually choose to do that and live that way. And it's why I'm, you know, so happy to be speaking with you. And I think everything you've said is absolutely true, that we have a lot more choices than we think we have. And at the end of the day, the situation is the situation. It's our response to it. And I do think there are people who are born more optimistic, but I also am going to give you a lot of credit in that it, you know, people are built strong, but get stronger through lifting weights. And I think that you've made a conscious effort to strengthen that muscle that you already had. And to me, it's just talking to you and others like you out there, I'm making it sound like you're some alien species, is just so empowering, because from my upbringing, it literally was a thought process that anything that can go wrong will go wrong. And you just kind of have to cover your flank at all times. And it's been a very long journey to undo that thinking. And I know for me, I am still, especially this time, it's very hard being in an apartment with family at all times, is I am doing more to attempt to change my outlook than I ever have before, because I'm not doing it for myself. I'm doing it for my son, my wife, my daughter, my mother-in-law, for anyone who has to interact with me right now. But so many things are a choice. And I really hope that I can take your viewpoint more and more and more in life. And nothing happens overnight. Nothing changes overnight. And it's just getting 1% better. If I could do 1% a day, I'd be really happy. It might take me a little longer than that. But, you know, I really hope that there's even one person out there who can listen to your story. And there are a few things, more questions I'm going to ask you, because other things you said to me off in the past that have just made such a huge impact on my viewpoint, but just can see that, that, you know, there is no such thing as an overnight success. Anyone who's made it has gone through trials and tribulations and worked their ass off to get there and really has been willing to put themselves out there. But, you know, making kind of a quick, sharp jump, there is something that you said to me that really, really, really resonated with me. And it's a tattoo that you have. And it directly was something that I think your grandmother said to you about your relationship with your dad. I'd love you to share that, because I found it so incredibly impactful that I think about it daily since you've told it to me.
Yeah, I'd love to share it. You know, something that my grandmother taught me at a young age, and my grandmother, you know, I was blessed with this wonderful grandmother, my father's mother, who was this little Italian woman, and she was very spiritual. She passed away about 6 years, 7 years ago at 93, but incredibly spiritual person. She was a practicing Buddhist, and she introduced my sister and I to meditation at a very young age. My grandmother would meditate for hours every day. She was intense. Anyway, she made it very clear to me as I was coming up, and she knew that I had a very difficult relationship with my father, as did many people have difficult relationships with my father, including her. She made it very clear to me that we as human beings, as individuals, cannot change anyone. It's almost impossible to actually change someone who, you know, we have to want to change ourselves in order to make that happen. Now, I do believe wholeheartedly through my experience that humans can change at any age. I see it happen regularly. So I don't believe that humans can't change, but I do believe that one human cannot change another human by sheer will. And she taught me that. She taught me that, you know, there's nothing I can do in my power to change someone. And so because I can't change anyone, I have to change if I want to continue a relationship with somebody. So she taught me this saying that says, "Bless you, change me." And it's something that I hold. I mean, even though I do fight it at times, you know, like, look, I've gone through, you know, a couple of pretty tough relationship issues, specifically with business partners, where I've like attempted or wanted to change them, and I have to go back to the bless you, change me. If I want this relationship to work out, I have to accept that person or that thing for what it is and actually change myself. Very hard to do, but it is truly, in my experience, the only way to actually develop great relationships, because people are who they are, and you know, and you are who you are, or I am who I am. And I'm sure there's plenty of things that people don't love about me, as I, you know, easily discover things that I don't necessarily love about others. And so I think the best way to, you know, conduct in relationships is to genuinely make a choice to accept people for who they are and then change my perspective of them. Because just because I feel a certain way doesn't mean it's true. Fear is false evidence appearing real. That's the sort of way I've been taught that, you know, fear is not necessarily true, and feelings are not necessarily facts. And they might feel like facts, but in actuality, when you peel back the onion, you know, feelings don't actually, are not always, and sometimes, and I would say most of the time, feelings are inaccurate. And so bless you, change me has been, you know, something that I've really, I've used as a tool in my toolbox for many, many years, just because I believe that in order for things to really work out long term, you have to accept people for who they are and change yourself.
You know, I wish that mantra had been introduced to me much earlier in my life. Some of my earliest memories as a child with a father who was incredibly loving, but deeply, deeply depressed, and a mother who, again, deeply loving, but had grown up taking care of alcoholic parents. So taking care of a deeply depressed, suicidal husband and two kids. It was sort of a role she was made for and did without thinking twice. My whole childhood was attempting to do things that would make them what I needed them at the moment to be. And it sort of carried through a very long swath of my life, and it made things incredibly painful. Instead of looking for the right people for me, I would find people who I would try to change to be the right people for me. And I got incredibly lucky by my whole life crashing into shambles, I would say 15 plus years ago, to where I was totally unemployable, completely unable to even get off a couch, and had to rebuild my life and learn very quickly that old thought that I would be able to change people. Why not just find someone who fit me? Like, it's a lot easier. That doesn't mean that I still don't have those tendencies to try to change other human beings, because I did it for so long. But it just, when you told me that incantation, that was less than 2 weeks ago, I've really tried my best to start harnessing it now, because I can't think of anything that anyone's ever said to me that has been more impactful. And the choice really is with me and is with anyone. And it's true that, you know, you look yourself in the mirror and that's the only person you have control over. And I'd love for so many people in my life to be different than who they are in a way that would benefit me, but I need to do that for myself. That's not their role. And I'm learning that and trying to live it more. And I see you as such a, you know, a lighthouse for me of the things you've gone through and the way you've gone through it with such, you know, grace and strength. And, you know, I really am so thankful that you had this time to spend with us today. And I really hope that a lot of people out there do listen and are able to take little nuggets away, because I can't, I'd have to put you in top five, and compared to a lot of people I've known a lot longer, top five of most influential people in my life, just from the way you've carried yourself and little bits and tidbits you've given me. So I really thank you, not only for being on this show, but for being in my life and adding really a role model for me. And I'm sure you've been that for a lot of other people on how to choose to live a happier life. So I really, 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 from the bottom of my heart, thank you. I really hope that your grandfather is able to pull through, and I'm blown away by your outlook on the whole thing. And, you know, I don't know if you have anything else that you want to share with anyone out there who might be looking to get something off the ground or having a tough time that you haven't already shared. And I don't know also if there are any charities right now that you're really paying attention to that you want to draw a light to right now that might be able to help someone out there.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, man, thank you so much. That means the world to me that you shared that with me. People are everything. The longest human study ever recorded in history is a study done at Harvard on happiness. I don't know if you've heard about this one.
Absolutely, yeah.
So the study goes back to the 30s, and they took 750 men. Half of them were sophomores at Harvard, and half of them were from the roughest streets in Boston. And they followed these guys up until today, and most of them have passed away. But they followed these guys, and they sent them surveys, and, you know, every single, I think once a quarter for the last, whatever, 80 years or something like that. And what they found, the most sort of interesting component that they found about human beings and happiness is relationships, personal relationships. And so I believe that that is the most important thing in life. And there's been moments throughout my career where I've definitely not made that the number one priority because I was so head down and focused on just working hard and making things bigger and better. But this time has given me an opportunity to remember that relationships with other human beings is the most important thing. And, you know, somebody said something to me the other day that was so just, it just hit me right in the chest. And I asked her for a piece of advice. And she said, you know, Chernow, all it takes is all you've got. And I was just like, wow. And it's the truth. All it takes is all you've got, you know. And once you give it all you got, it becomes part of your DNA. And the way I look at life is I give it all I've got. If I empower anybody to sort of take this with them, you know, there's no worse person in your life than yourself. There's no bigger roadblock or hurdle than yours truly. The moment you are able to step out of your own way and commit to decisions that you make on a daily basis, it's not about long term. It's marathon is definitely the mentality, but the putting game, the short game, is the only way to get to the end goal of that long term dream or vision. It starts in the morning when you wake up and you make a decision on a daily basis to either do it or not do it. And it's all up to you. And there's no one to blame. And there's no fucking excuses. Anybody can do it. Anybody can do it. It's just, it is a daily reprieve. You make a call when you get up and repeat. Anyway, I love being on the show. Thank you so much for having me on, man. I appreciate you more than you know. And I'm grateful to be your friend. And, you know, you're just an awesome dude. And I'm stoked that you went out here and took the bull by the horns and started this podcast.
No, Michael, it is thanks to you that this is happening. And I can't think of better words of wisdom and advice to give out right now. And I know that it's the hardest thing for people who aren't wired that way to start doing. But I know from the things that I've been able to achieve that all scared the ever-loving shit out of me, or I was just too dumb to know they were scary when I started. It's only been hard work and effort that makes me feel good. When I phone it in, I feel like shit. And it is a personal decision, and you're 100% right. And I do also 100% agree with the study about relationships, because my life growing up was devoid of them. And all I wanted was friendships. And I had to realize that the only way to gain them was to become a fully formed human being myself, and a real person, not someone who was going to be the fake friend that someone needed, but a real friend there no matter what, and someone who would run through walls and never, ever take advantage of anyone under any circumstance. And, you know, you've just, there's so many things that you've said here that I can't wait to actually listen to again myself and have future conversations with you offline that sadly no one who listens to this will be able to hear. But maybe if this does continue on, or I shouldn't say if, when this does continue on, maybe we'll have you on for a part two in the future. But just to wrap up, thank you so much for being a guiding light to anyone that knows you, and to being there for me and for our friendship. And the way you've handled things every time we've ever interacted has been something that has guided how I want to act. So thank you. And I hope you have a great rest of the day. And again, our thoughts are with you and your grandfather. And if you need anything, I'm here. And just thank you so much.
Thanks, Warner. Stay safe, man.
You as well. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Creating Home. While we all face this new and uncertain world, I find it inspirational and reassuring to learn of our guests' journeys from around the country, and I hope you do too. Join us next week as we continue to learn what goes into creating home.